You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
Who is it? Come here.
Captain Lorenzo?
Yeah.
John McClain.
Yeah, I know who you are. You're the asshole that just broke 7 FAA and 5 District of Columbia regulations running around my airport with a gun shooting at people. What do you call that shit?
Self-defense.
Oh, what, you think that L.A. badge is going to get you a free lunch or something around here?
No. Maybe a little professional courtesy.
In an airport on Christmas week. You gotta be kidding.
Okay, fuck courtesy. How about just being professional? Your boys just walked away from a crime scene, Captain. You can't wrap this thing up in 10 minutes and you know it. You gotta seal the area off, take pictures, dust for prints.
Don't lecture me, hotshot. I know what I'm doing. We're gonna dust it down, we'll take all the pictures, we'll sweep for fibers.
You're gonna do this after 300 or 400 other more people go through there? Christ, you'd be lucky to get a print from one of your own people. Just shut down that area and send your people
in. Shut the area down. It's that simple. Now, just shut the area down? Yeah. And I got everybody from the Shriners Convention to the goddamn Boy Scouts traipsing through here. I got lost kids, lost dogs, not now, later. I got international diplomats. I got a fucking reindeer flying in here from the fucking petting zoo. But John McClain, he's got a little problem. Hell, let's shut down the whole fucking airport. Now, what do you think they're gonna say upstairs when I tell them that?
Why don't you pick up the phone and find out?
Because I don't need full fucking forensics to tell me all this was some punk stealing luggage.
Luggage? That punk pulled a Glock 7 on me. You know what that is? It's a porcelain gun made in Germany. Doesn't show up on your airport x-ray machines here, and it costs more than you making a month.
You'd be surprised what I'm making a month.
If it's more than $1.98, I'd be very surprised.
Hey, McClain, don't start believing your own press, huh? Yeah, I know all about you and that Nakatomi thing in L.A. But just because the TV thinks you're hot shit, that don't make it so. Look, you are in my little pond now, and I am the big fish that runs it. So you cap some lowlife, fine. I'll send your fucking captain in L.A. a fucking commendation. Now, in the meantime, you get the hell out of my office before I have been thrown out of my goddamn airport.
Hey, Carmine, let me ask you something. What sets off the metal detectors first?
The lead in your ass or the shit in your brains?
Fuck.
Get ready, binge listeners.
What do you call that shit?
We call it the Binge Movie Aftertaste Die Hard Retrospective.
You are about to have a very bad day.
Tell me about it.
Join Garrett.
Now you're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Story of my life.
Batch.
Are you aiming for these people?
No. Maybe that mine.
And Ammon.
So you take this under advisement, jerkweed.
As they look at and dissect all 5 films of the Die Hard franchise.
We not want to help us.
White people.
That's right.
From John McTiernan's first revolutionary 1988 film.
Welcome to the party, pal!
All the way through John Moore's 2013 entry.
You're not gonna die today!
The boys discuss what works in the film, what doesn't, and the possibility of whether there could be more McClain mishaps on the horizon.
Piece of cake. Give us something harder next time.
So who do you listeners think you are? Hillary Clinton?
Oh, God, please don't let me die.
Stop what you're doing right now. Unless it's driving McClain style. And listen to how bad a Christmas can really get.
Thanks for the advice.
Die Hard 2, Die Harder, released June 29th, 1990. Budget on it was $70 million. Box office, a phenomenal $240 million, and is directed by Rennie Harlan. Who?
Yes.
We are once again back on the Die Hard train. Ammon, did you see this in the movies, or did you have
no.
For this?
I watched this. This is another VHS extravaganza. Actually, I might have watched this live.
first time I may have watched this on TV.
Really?
With all the edits, and it's so long with all the commercials. I remember sitting here watching this movie, and it took like the entire it took so long. I mean, it was like a 3+ hour event on TV with all the commercials and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw it was actually on TV. So when I watch it now, like all the swearing in it, like makes it even funnier to me because I'm used to all the like really bad edits.
So you watched it on TV and that's how you recorded it too? Was like the way?
I eventually got a copy of an actual, you know, the actual version of it on VHS, but I remember specifically watching this on like NBC some Sunday evening, and it just took forever to get through, but also it was awesome.
Oh, nice.
But also Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon, which is like the greatest fucking TV edit of all time.
I think I read something about that. That was the way they edited it, Yippee-ki-yay, in this one.
And you know what's even funnier is like his name is literally Mr. Falcon. So it sort of works, but watching it, like I never really made the dots that the guy's last name was Falcon.
Yeah,
they like know, General yeah. Falcon. So like it was just like
so random.
He just called him Mr. Falcon. Like it was just a way to get the M and the F in there. So it sort of made sense. That's what I always thought it was until pretty recently, actually. I was like, oh, fuck, the guy's name is Falcon. So it sort of makes sense.
They couldn't go mother father.
Terrible way. Yeah, hey, Yippee-ki-yay, right. Mr. Falcon totally works. I mean, they got t-shirts of that shit now. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, so they do.
One of those.
That's amazing. Batch, man, what was your introduction to this one?
I believe the VHS mixtape was Die Hard 2, Predator 2, and Big Trouble Little China that we would watch at nauseam in my cottage. That's a good triple threat right there.
Boy, remember when you put like three movies on a tape and then like you would sit and watch all three and then you'd probably rewind and do it again? I remember I used to do that a lot.
The stupid copy protection would come in, so they would go fucking light, dark, light, dark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I'd get all mine from HBO, so I'd have the classic, like, miniature, you know, where it zooms in over the town mm-hmm. as they start the HBO, like, feature presentation, which they don't do anymore, but they should because it's awesome.
Yeah, that was
these kids awesome. Today don't know that what a pain in the ass it was to connect two VCRs together.
Oh, yes. Yes, the old two VCR trick. Absolutely. I don't know why, but my parents thought it was cool to take their 12-year-old son, who was me, to the movies that July 4th weekend, and we saw Die Hard 2 at the movies.
That's awesome.
I don't know. I don't remember the exact circumstances. I don't remember if I begged them. I don't know, but I remember I walked out of there. 12-year-old me was extremely happy with what he had just seen. Like I loved it at the time. And I was all set. Let's go over the main players here. The director is no longer John McTiernan. We have Rennie Harlan, who was 2 years removed from A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Master. And rumor has it that they saw the dailies of another movie coming out that year called The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. They decided this was their guy to bring Die Hard back to life.
I love that movie.
Oh, God. You know, I've rewatched that movie recently. It doesn't really hold up for me. I don't know. I was just like, that's another one that I thought it was amazing when I was a kid. But I was just like,
ever seen that, but I'm a huge fan of Rennie Harlan. I mean,
are you really?
Yeah, fucking cliffhanger. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And I know he failed with Cutthroat Island, but at the time, I was all about fucking Cutthroat Island. Now it's terrible. It's pretty terrible. But at the time, in the theater, Cutthroat Island is a fun fucking movie to get through. Long Kiss Goodnight, fantastic. Like, the dude has a pretty good track record. And I feel like, you know, obviously Die Hard 2 kicked his career off. And for a while, like, he was the shit. It eventually went, he's out of the mainframe, and now he does straight to video stuff. But for a while, Rennie Harlan was the shit.
About 10-year span, the guy had a pretty decent career going, didn't he?
Yeah.
What was the last movie he did?
Oh, God. Was it the one he did with John Cena, maybe? Or no, no, no. Rounds? He did No, he did the he did one of the Hercules films, I thought. Maybe?
Oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, a couple years ago that failed miserably.
Yeah, and he did a couple actually on the Air on the Head podcast. We interviewed Rennie Harlan for some straight to video war movie that we didn't give a shit about, but it was Rennie Harlan, so like of course we're gonna fucking interview Rennie Harlan. So
Yeah.
I imagine there's a lot more Rennie Harlan movies like that out at this point.
I was supposed to interview the guy. I shouldn't say I was supposed to. I was trying to get an interview with him around the time that Hercules movie was coming out. And, man, I was all excited. He was like, yeah, I'll be there. And then, he said he had a press tour to do. And by the time he got back, the movie was already out and it tanked. And I don't think he wanted to talk about it anymore. So. Yeah, but this time, I was a big fan of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4. I loved that as a child as well. He did another movie called Prison. I remember I used to really enjoy that one as well. A little horror film from late 80s. I was all set, man. I wanted to see this guy do this movie proud, and I was a kid. I loved it. Now, well, we'll discuss how I feel about it now. So as we meet McClane again, he gets into it with Vito, a Washington, D.C. airport cop. And this was a weird way to reintroduce McClane to the audience, wasn't it? I don't know. Watching this scene now, it doesn't really play for me anymore. I don't know. It's a goofy scene.
It is goofy, but I kind of like that you're just shoved like into the middle of the crazy holiday airports. Like,
yeah,
he starts off down on his luck, basically. Like, he just got towed. He's just like, fuck, man, give me a break. Like, you get why he's stuck there.
But we also learned that he's moved actually to Los Angeles, and him and his wife have gotten back together.
Yeah, we've also learned that, which begs the question, why are they taking separate flights? But they're there back together, and I'm definitely going to talk about that relationship as we talk about the movie. We are then introduced to our villain doing naked Tai Chi. This is another this was odd. This was odd. Played.
Well, that's how my podcast.
Pictures or didn't happen. Played by Mr. William Sadler is our villain here. You know, it's very easy to say that he doesn't follow up Hans very well because Hans was like the villain of the time. But he's a different type of villain, and I think he works for this film. I think he's fine.
Yeah,
I have a lot of knocks against the film, but this isn't one of them.
Yeah, you can't really follow up. You can't surpass something like Hans Gruber. So, as a follow-up, he fucking gets the job done. He's pretty menacing. He's a badass. He has a whole fucking crew behind him. You believe it. Even this weird naked Tai Chi thing, it's a memorable scene. I'll tell you that much.
He's jacked in this movie.
And he's really fucking jacked. Yeah. It's weird, but it kind of works.
It does. And, to tip this thing off, guys, we'll get into it, but instead of dealing with terrorists robbing a building, basically a heist, it's set on the TV behind the guy doing the naked Tai Chi, which is hard to hear if you're not paying attention to that. They are housing a drug dealer by the name of Esperanza. So Falcon. This move...
Esperanza.
Yeah, Falcon. Esperanza Falcon, thank you. Drug dealer? Why go through all this trouble for this drug dealer? That's my question.
He's a very rich drug dealer.
Let the fucker in. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, sure. Politically, watching it now, it's just like drugs, the drug war in America. That's kind of how I watch it. Watching it now, you're right. It doesn't make any sense. Who gives a shit? But I think at the time, I mean, this is like... post-Reagan years, like, say no to drugs. Drugs are bad. All about going against the... So it kind of makes sense for the time. I think it was just a relevant thing that was happening in the, early 90s.
I didn't think about it in that context, but you're right. We did have the war on drugs going on at that time. We had the say no to drugs thing. And so, yeah, I guess he would be looked at as a bad guy in the late 90s. And I also want to say, guys, this was, and this is true of future sequels as well, but this was not a book written by Roderick Thorpe that we're following up Die Hard with. It's a book written by another guy. I can't remember the name, but I remember the book's name was 58 Minutes. And I read
this
that.
This is based on another book?
Yeah, this is based on another book called 58 Minutes.
Oh, fucking shit.
No McClane, nothing. It was about a guy trying to clear the airport and save, once again, his daughter up in the air. But it's, you know, it has nothing to do with Joel Leland from the last film. And so, yeah, they just converted that book. They had the rights to it. They're like, oh, this would make a good Die Hard film, and we get what we get. So,
I mean, I like the setup. It's different. Too. It's different, but the same, right? Like, it's one guy versus in a confined space. You know, it's an airport versus a building, but like he's not. I mean, I guess he does leave it, I guess, at some point, but not really. Mm-hmm. And it's him against everybody. And he's basically, because fucking Dennis Franz is a cocksucker, he's basically working alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works. It's a little weird. I mean, it's not a natural sequel. I don't know. Like, but it's, I think it's better than another building. I mean, if this is just another building.
It shifts things enough it does feel different.
It's not like it's under siege. He's not on a boat this time. Or he's not in an airplane, Passenger 57 style. Like, they went with a different route, and I like it. I like as a sequel, it works.
The terrorists walk through the airport, and we see glimpses of the T-1000. And John Leguizamo, John Leguizamo, who I completely forgot was in this film. I didn't realize it. He has like one line that was dubbed by somebody else, and I guess he was supposed to have it. According to his book, he was supposed to have a bigger part, but they cut it down to like one line because he wasn't tall enough. It's just funny seeing these guys, like, you know, 25 years later watching this movie. It's just funny.
Yeah.
So McClane calls his wife, and here we go, guys. One thing that is totally evident in watching this scene of them making his phone call. In the last movie, the relationship between Holly and John is that it was not a healthy one. And but here, they're healthy, they're laughing, they're giggling, they're once again in love. And I gotta say, I think the movie kind of suffers from it. I think you're taking away tension. I think the tension of that last movie was behind how McClane was so guilty over not being with his wife and not being there for her and trying his best to rescue her so that he can say those things to her like he just told Powell. I think that tension is gone and the movie suffers from it. I'll be honest.
No, I disagree, man. I was feeling it.
Were you?
I'm with Bash.
Actually, just grew as a character. Like, he moved across the fucking coast just to fucking be with her so she could work her job and put his family back together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also kind of feel like if they were still at odds, then it's just like a been there, done that. Like, we've seen this already. Now they're fucking, like, it's the happy ending we wanted at the end of Die Hard. And it's continued into this movie. And I'm okay with it, man. I think it worked. There's enough other shit going down. In one way, you're right. The tension with her and him and that whole, like, angle is not in this movie, but there's so much other shit going on. I never, like, missed it. Like, I didn't miss their issues. And I guess the fact that there's some sort of tension on the airplane with Holly sort of, like, makes up for it with the news reporter. Because that cocksucker's back.
Yeah, I'll get to him.
So it kind of... So for me, it works. Like, I'm with that. So, like, I'm okay. I'm happy that they're happy. And things are okay. And it makes the stakes higher on John to make sure her fucking plane doesn't explode.
Yeah, but you say this movie doesn't, you know, it would give this movie a been there, done that feel. Doesn't it kind of have a been there, done that feel, though?
Well, as the movie goes on? It's a sequel, right? It has to. Mm-hmm. But it also, like, ups the ante. I'm just saying, like, in terms of, like, if it was another building, right, you would be like, rolling our eyes. And if this was just another, like, oh, they're still fighting each other, like, okay, we got it.
Yeah. Fair enough. So a van pulls up to a church, and they tell the guy Howe's there that they're coming in, and they end up shooting the poor bastard.
Yeah, I looked at this because that's fucking meat from Porky's.
Is it really?
Yep. Because what other fucking movie is he in? Wow. Nothing.
Wow.
And Porky's in Die Hard 2. That's it.
that's all quite does. A resume. I love that his code name is Buckwheat.
Yeah,
that's always made me laugh. He just, you know, they do this gruesome murder and he dies. You know,
it is a brutal fucking kill too.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. And Harlan has it in slow motion as the guy's falling down. The guy picks up the radio, goes, "Yeah, this is Buckwheat." It's like, oh, wow. Way to break the tension. Terrorists are at a table while McClane is once again smoking at the airport, which we pointed out last film.
And carrying a gun again.
I love all the smoking in the airport. Like, he smokes throughout this whole movie in the airport. It's funny.
He does. And he notices shit going down around him. And Colonel Stewart...
The only guy, there's a million people in this fucking airport. And he picks out the three guys doing something fucking shady at a table in a food court.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's a – I don't know if you guys have ever been to Dulles. I've been there once. It's a big fucking airport, man. And so it's funny that these guys decided to get this thing going, like, right in front of them, right? It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's chaos.
So McClane is in the luggage bin. A fight breaks out, and it's fun enough, but something just feels missing about these action scenes, man. Like, they have stormtrooper aim when they're firing at John, right? But for some reason, they can hit a can of hairspray out of his hand. I don't know. It doesn't have that elegance that McTiernan had. It's just a different way of filming. But I'm not really enjoying these early action scenes, I'll be honest.
I'm blaming the hideous sweater that John's wearing in this first act of the movie.
It is a pretty bad sweater.
It's pretty bad. Like, it's not as good, right? They're not as... I don't know if it's because of the tension or maybe because it just starts pretty early on. So there's no buildup, right? There's absolutely no... Like, this fucking thing just starts off and we're in this situation. And one way is I can appreciate that, because what are we fucking waiting around for? We know it's like we're here for one reason. It's a Die Hard sequel. We don't need to wait around for the buildup. But at the same time, like, yeah, you know, they're going up the fucking the airport, the luggage Rolodex things, and they're shooting and he's on a bike. Like, I think it just goes. Like, the savageness of McClane in these fights, I think, is lost. And maybe it is, like, you know, the decision to have him riding a bike and ring the bell before he jumps on somebody. Like, it's not super awesome. I mean, it's still cool to see McClane kicking ass, and I'm not going to complain about it, but it is lacking the full Die Hard experience. Like, it is not as brutal, and the stakes aren't as high yet, because it just started, right?
Yeah,
like we don't really, just kind of thrown in there.
I do love how, like, Harlan has a shot of, like, a set of golf clubs coming by on the luggage, and then, like, McClane just grabs one, and, you know, we see the very next scene that he's beating one up with one. I like that, and even the McClane dubbed in line with this, what is this, a tag team? Like, that stuff kind of works for me, but I don't know.
There's some bad ADR in this movie.
Yeah, the ADR is pretty shitty. You're right about that. So we then get the biggest contrivance of the film to me, guys. As they are 30 minutes away from landing up in the air, we see a reappearance of Dick Thornburg getting his seat reassigned right near Holly.
Yeah, not even near Holly, in the same row as Holly.
Yeah.
He gets kicked the fuck out of first class.
And they haven't they didn't notice this the entire flight. They've been on the flight for 5 hours.
It's ridiculous, and it really makes you question why you wouldn't just make the woman reporter, like, roaming around the airport, like, the thorn in everybody's side, except, you know, instead of this guy who, you know, we knew from the last film and blah, blah, blah. But do we really need, like, these scenes between him and Holly? Because I don't really like any of them. I liked him at the time, but not much anymore. I think they just kind of
How long was this flight supposed to be initially?
Well, then leave from
it's across
California.
The country. It's like 6 hours, right?
Yeah, it's like five, 6 hours.
He must have been such a pain in the ass in first class. Like, they're just fucking with him at this point, like an hour left in the flight, putting him back.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, they are fucking with him, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they all hate him.
Yeah,
offering to buy him champagne and shit.
Yeah.
It's some memberberry shit going on. Like, hey, guys, remember this guy from the first movie? Mm-hmm. Remember her?
Yeah.
This is what happened since then, and there's this tension between them. But he's a cocksucker, so yeah, do I like seeing him on screen? Not really.
Mm-hmm.
It's unnecessary until until later on when it becomes part of the plot in some ways. But
Has he ever not played a cocksucker in a movie?
That's all he knows how to do.
That's all I've seen. That's all I've seen him play, actually. So
John gets the old lady with the taser, though.
Oh, you like that? Fuck off. Come on, Patch. What is your defense of that?
It's funny. She hit her dog with a taser.
Oh.
I don't know.
It's kind of funny. It's kind of sad, but it just sets it up for later, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's
also in that scene.
In there.
in that scene, they have a, when they show the close up of the taser, I don't know if you guys notice it, but there's a ad for, I think it's Lethal Weapon 2.
Oh, is there really? I didn't notice that.
While in the magazine, which is funny to me because only because that's a Warner title. So it's, and I find it interesting that Fox allowed that kind of, you know, they're very similar in that, in this era of like action franchises, but they're competition too. So I was like, oh, it's a simpler time, interesting choice.
It's a simpler time where you could smoke on an airplane and carry a lethal weapon.
Oh, that's true. That is also true. Huh?
Well,
you have a taser on your airplane.
Yeah. And the thing that makes this, that the only thing they have in common really is they're both produced by Joel Silver. That'd be the only reason.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's probably why they threw that in there.
Yeah. So John gets a meeting with Carmine, played by Dennis Verhunts, and I just love the use of fuck in this here meeting.
Oh, yeah.
it's one of the most entertaining portions of the film for me. It's just fucking hilarious listening to these two just go at it.
Yeah, and we're back at it with John's constant battle with not only authority. Well, yeah, it's basically authority, but not just authority over him, just like the cops. Like, he's a cop, but there's when he has to deal with cops that aren't, like, you know, that he works with on a regular basis or whatever, he's just battling them. Like, listen to him for a second. And they're just cocksuckers. Same thing with Breakfast Club principal. Like, he's just a fucking cocksucker about it. So, you know, he's filling that role, and he's a cocksucker. He's a fucking cocksucker.
He's a fucking asshole.
Yeah, and this is one of those scenes I remember on the NBC version of how like crazy dubbed it is.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Bad.
I'm sure it's like an action-packed 30-second scene.
It's cut up a lot, but it's also super dubbed.
Yeah.
The emphasis that he put on the fucking reindeer, I expected that to come into play later on in the movie. John McClane's going to ride a fucking reindeer.
Flying in here from the fucking petting zoo. Just great, great stuff. Oh, Dennis Franz. He would go on to go, of course, on NYPD Blue. And, you know, he's another one. He'd get characterized as a cop his entire fucking career. Because he'd been one on Hill Street Blues as well. So we learned that the Dos Equis coke dealer, as I call him, is on the plane on the way here. And we know from this scene on this guy watching over him, he's going to be dead meat. But this scene brings up an interesting point, guys. Did this plot to get Esperanza released completely rely on there being a huge blizzard on top of him getting off his plane by killing this guard and flying the plane in all by himself? This is one of the craziest fucking plots I've ever seen.
So obviously the blizzard. I don't think the blizzard, like, they could have done this without the blizzard, right?
Really?
But that's a good point about what was the point of him killing everybody on the plane so he could land it himself? It doesn't make any sense. Because they're landing anyway.
Yeah,
if they shut down the tower, you would still
have
the
drama. He could have landed it, have actual pilots land it, and have it be all good, and then kill everybody on the plane. That would make more sense.
Or don't land it at the airport, land it on a field somewhere, and have them meet up with him. I don't know. It's fucking just crazy. Again, it's contrivance after contrivance. And you know what? Die Hard had some of those contrivances too that we went over. I don't have any problems with a lot of the contrivances, but when you're in a sequel and you're trying so hard to make it, you know, relatable to people, and you have McClane who has been one movie off from being like the biggest action hero of the summer. I don't know, man. Like, you gotta raise the stakes a little bit, and that's what I'm feeling about this movie, is that they have to do one contrivance after another, and it's getting to the point where it's getting ridiculous to me.
Well, it's no different from the first movie with Gruber's plan relying on the FBI from cutting the power to shop the last electoral
book,
right?
True.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, as you mentioned it, yes, that doesn't make any sense. But watching it, it didn't bother me.
Didn't bother me at the time, but it's bothering me now. You know, it's just one of those things where I'm just like, God damn.
Yeah.
McClane gets the prints of the bad guy he killed, and in another contrivance, he sends them to his old buddy, Powell, in a fax.
You remember fax machines?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's shit,
so,
right?
I love all the 90s shit. Like, oh, it's so night. You're so 90s. You're stuck. This is the age of technology, the 90s. It's a fax machine.
Wants to bang them, too.
Yeah, this is when McClane's just like, I'm married, but all of these chicks just want to fuck me. It's because he has a full head of hair. He still has hair in this movie.
Yeah, he does. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the fact. I love that.
But I love it. I fucking love that shit. It's so cheesy and stupid, but also kind of awesome. Just the facts.
This is what sets up what I was saying in the last podcast, that by this point Bruce Willis is a star, so now everybody's fawning over him, and now he's got the lines to back it up now. Just the facts, man. I don't know. It's just funny. Like this is what really cements him as an action star, because chicks can't resist him, right? Now he's at that point. So the forensics from the fingerprints come back, and they show that the guy's been dead for 2 years. McClain makes his way up to the tower and tries explaining what he feels was about to go down, and once again, nobody is listening.
If we're going to have problems with some shit, here's a problem. How does this guy just take the elevator into the fucking control tower?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody notices it. Like, and it's not, and you can say, like, well, maybe he's a cop and he can just do that. No, because the fucking reporter does the same thing. Who the fuck is, like, manning the elevator where they have to get in? Like, nobody's just watching that? Like, anybody could get in the elevator and go up into
the fucking
control tower?
There's two cops posted at the bottom of the fucking elevator that fucking Franz yells at.
It's just stupid. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, he just moseys in and inserts his authority. And, you know, as an audience, you're like, yeah, listen to him. He's John McClane. He knows what he's talking about.
Fucking Trudeau.
But if you take a fucking step back and you're like, why should they listen to him right now? Like, at this point in the movie, he fucking killed a couple guys. He doesn't know anything. He's a cop and fucking across the country. Why is he in the control tower? It makes no sense. And they're like, yeah, get him in here. Like, let's listen to what he has to say. And then he's right. And at that point, I see, okay, now I start believing him. But how did he get there in the first place? That's what doesn't make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Colonel Stewart makes his plan of getting Esperanza down safely known, and he's a different kind of menacing. Like his tone is not above being conversational. But
he's got his shit together.
Yeah, he's got his shit together, but I'm not sure if this is the tone I kind of like. I don't know.
He's strictly business.
He just seems a little bland. Hans had a thing about him that he was unwittingly funny, and this guy he comes off as bland.
Yeah, he's not super memorable. I wouldn't say out of the Die Hard franchise that I remember this dude, Colonel Sanders, or whatever the fuck his name is, more than, like, Hans, and even his brother is a bigger name. He's up here with Timothy Olyphant. Like, he's just a bad guy, but he's just there to serve the purpose as the bad guy. He doesn't add anything to it.
Well, Hans' League of Diversity henchmen all had their own personality. You had, like, not Huey Lewis. You had the Asian dude eating chocolate bars.
Sure.
Whereas you got in the second one, all his henchmen kind of all looked the fucking same. They're all military guys. They're all cookie cutter.
And the only way we know about the T-1000 and John Leguizamo is that they went on to do other things. Everybody else is just kind of like the same dude in their fucking crappy 90s leather jackets.
That's a good point, Batch. I was actually going to bring that up later. Like, that's the thing about the first film. Like, in that first film, you had a lot of the bad guys, but some of them that you didn't know, but a lot of them you did. Like McTiernan gave them all, like, just kind of their own little personality. Here, they're all boring, and, like, I couldn't tell you the names of any of them except for the ones that Ammon just named, only because they went on to become stars.
We know the actors. We don't know
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. A great point there. Now, did McClane really have to go through another elevator shaft to get to where he needed to go yet again? I know the script calls it out, but I'm not sure I like them playing.
Why does this keep happening to me?
I kind of like these throwbacks where he's just like, fuck, because this is why I like it. They're acknowledging, like, it's kind of meta, and, like, they're acknowledging that it's the same thing. They're acknowledging
it's a sequel,
that they're doing it again.
Yeah,
and it kind of works for me. Like, it's funny. He's making fun of himself. How does this, like, I'm fucking never leaving the house on Christmas again, or whatever he says. And
another fucking Christmas, another fucking air duct.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, he's with it. We're with it. If they didn't say that and they still had him do through the things, it'd be a little douchier. It works. It works for me. But I totally get it. Like, I could see your annoyance, though, Garrett.
Yeah. He runs into the janitor, who is no Argyle.
No Argyle. I'd rather have Argyle in this movie.
He gives him directions to the Skywalk, where everyone meets up in yet another gritty action scene. And I'm not going to say it's bland, because the action scene here is actually pretty good. You know, gets kicked off by the T-1000, killing the head of the SWAT team. But, you know, again, I'm just not sure I'm liking the action scenes. There are a couple I'll call out later as liking, but so far I'm kind of on the other side of the fence.
There's something missing. I totally agree. And that's my whole thing with this movie as a whole. Like, it has all the elements. On paper, it works. But there's just something not there to make
it great. Do you think it's because McLean is actually interacting with more people in this movie than he did in the first one? Because that first one, he was alone in that fucking building.
That could be a part of it.
He's got to deal with the fucking cocksucker Dennis Franz. He's moving over here. He's out of the building. He's waving down the plane.
No, because for me, it's like, as Garrett was saying, it's the action scenes themselves.
Yeah, okay.
Don't just, like, get it there. On paper, yes, it's great. There's a couple cool kills here and there. But, like, as it all fucking, like, plays out, it's not as super as exciting or it's not as thrilling. Visible. As the fucking first movie, and you start to notice, I think, about after the end of this one, I feel like.
And Harlan uses some weird devices, you know, during these action scenes, like there's some distorted lenses, and you know, in that last film, De Bont and McTiernan, I mean, they were telling just a great action story, and they had dolly shots. Those cameras moved, and in this one, Harlan's not really shooting them that well. They're exciting enough, but again, just having a guy standing over McLean just going, "I want to kick your fucking ass." I'm like, "No, dude, no." And that's another part too. Even though we have the same writer from the last film, the same screenwriter, some of the dialogue in this is fucking cringe-inducing as well. I just can't go with it.
It's super cheesy. Yeah,
it's what the first Die Hard influenced, right? Like a lot of these action scenes, and you called Passenger 57 out earlier. Like it's kind of reminding me of that. Like it's just cheesy action that the first Die Hard wasn't.
Yeah, and this also ends with one of, like, the most unrealistic, but at the time was awesome, but it's, as you think about it, it's so stupid, where his gun is on the fucking escalator walkway thing, and the same guy's walking towards it, and he turns it on to get to it first, and the guy, like, doesn't get to it first, but he's actually closer the entire time. Oh. It doesn't make any sense, dude. You're like, wait, how did he... Wait, what?
Yeah.
Fuck, it's so stupid. And you see it coming a mile away. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, he's trapped. Oh, it's on a fucking conveyor belt. What's he going to do? Oh my God, the guy's coming. Of course, he's going to push the button to get it closer to him. Stupid.
Yeah, I have my knock against this scene, but it does give McLean his one ally in the film, which is Barnes. I guess that's his pal, right? Like, that's the Al Powell in this.
Sort of.
Oh, come on. This guy's doing everything. This guy's doing everything.
But they don't have the relationship that Powell had.
Like, true.
When I think of Powell, I think of them like they're like BFFs by the end of that movie. You're connected. Right. These guys, dude's like, all right, this guy's, you know, McLean knows what he's talking about. We can help each other. We're working towards the same goal. Let's work together. But like they never get buddy-buddy. You never get to know this dude. He's just... comes up with ideas and he's out thinking the fucking terrorist, but there's no character development on him. You have no idea who he is as a person.
True. It is after the fight on the Skywalk that Sadler's character, Stewart, decides he decides to crash a plane, and it turns unexpectedly dark.
The dude from Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah. What's his name? Yeah. Yeah.
He's a pilot. That guy.
Even though it's been 16 years since 9/11, I still can't watch these passengers getting happy to land and then crash on the runway. And it doesn't have the same type of fun I used to have with it, you know. And again, this isn't the fun that we had in the last film. This is fucking dark.
It's a darker film.
It is.
It's darker. It's brutal. Although it's not as like they don't treat killing an entire airplane full of people as like as heavy as they do in this movie. Like they kind of brush it off. It's not as savage, I don't think, as they could have. Mm. I just chalk it up as, like, that's how this... I mean, this era of action movies, they got away with some pretty brutal shit.
Yeah.
Fucking just, like, murdering an entire airplane of people for entertainment's sake.
Yeah.
Like, that's just kind of par for the course for me. So it's never bothered me, but this time watching it, when I rewatched it this week, it was like, holy shit, like, they just fucking killed all these people.
Fucking, yeah, I know.
It's just a question proof I have point. That scene.
Just a
so
proof
they just
point.
Killed all those people on the plane, yet the entire airport's not freaking out yet.
I think that's what starts off the freak out, though, right?
It does start it off, but I think to piggyback on Batch's point right there, like, this is the time when all the TV shows and everything would be off the air, because this is a fucking tragedy going on. It needs to be covered, and what this also does too is it proves that, okay, these guys can't get away with what they've done now, because now they've just killed a bunch of innocent people. You know, before it was kind of, you know, it was like, oh, we want to get, I just want to get this, you know, this Dos Equis guy down on the plane, on the runway. And, you know, it was all about that at first. But now they've actually taken over the airport and they've actually crashed this plane. So now you cannot let them get away. That's also what it does for me. And, you know, Rennie and Harlan does play it up, man. I mean, he shows a stuffed animal on the runway after the fire's done. And he goes
and
way
get,
dark with
you
this.
You get some emotion from John, you know, like, he's crying on the tarmac.
John thinks that's his wife's
shell shocked. No, I think he just realized that he just fucking watched like over 100 people just get murdered, and mm-hmm. he could have stopped it, and he tried. Right.
That's what's great about it too. That is another thing that it does, is that it shows that McClane, you know, we're used to him saving the day, right? We're used to him getting this done, and he grabs a couple sticks and puts some rags on them, and he goes out in that runway. He burns them up, and he's trying. You're right, Damon. Yeah. He's
like,
trying.
You don't think he's. I mean, honestly, watching this, you think they're gonna like survive.
Yeah.
What's kind of funny is even when it's crashing, it doesn't even crash. It lands. Their wheels fall off because they're doing it to it, and then it just explodes.
Randomly.
It's just random explosion for no reason. Like, it would have survived. The fuselage is intact. It's just skidding.
Yeah.
Nope. Let's just blow it up. Boom.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah. And you guys mentioned what this did to McClane. I'm going to get a first knock on Willis here. You know, he can sell me when that sass is coming out of his mouth. You know, it's fine. I do not like when he's distraught. I feel when he has to emote in these films, he gets in a little bit of trouble. You know, it's just, he can't sell me on his emotions. And, you know, that this is when Bruce Willis, his sass kind of works against him.
I bought it. I mean, I get you get his emotions when his speech about Holly in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't work as well, but you got a guy crying. It's an action movie, dude. Like, I don't need to really feel my hero be super emotional. Like, this isn't fucking.
You're right.
This isn't Schindler's List or something. Like, I just I don't need that. Like, I just need him. Like, he's crying. The fact that he's crying in a movie where he's the lead, a hero, action hero like that, like, is kind of unprecedented. Like, that's unheard of. So that's more than we would normally get. Like, you don't see fucking Schwarzenegger or Stallone crying and shit like this.
Mm-hmm.
They would have just fucking shot a rocket launcher at him or something.
In the first film, he gets beat up physically. In the second film, he gets beat up emotionally.
True. But by the end of this, he's pretty beat up physically as well. But you're right. We are then introduced to Major Grant, played by John Amos. You know, knowing what he becomes by the end of the film kind of jaged me on him now, but from the outset, he seems like the one guy in power on McClane's side, doesn't he? And
right. Yeah, he's and his guy. He's his guy. He becomes his
guy. Yeah.
Everything
and when I look
says,
at
him, everything he says, like, he agrees with. Like, yeah, get this.
I like you, McClane.
I'm your kind of asshole. And when I look at it from that perspective, I kind of dig him. I enjoy John Amos in this film a lot. And he brings that hard edge that, you know, this film actually has. And that's one thing about this film is, you know, that last movie, there was a lot of great lines coming out of, you know, from a lot of people's mouths. And it was entertaining. And you know, here, there's really no joy. It's a darker film, you know. And I thought maybe John Amos would be a different, lighter character. But no, he's an asshole too. But as he says, he's McClane's kind of asshole. Dos Equis, a coke dealer, he shoots his pilots and lands the plane with John. You know, with John and Rowe. And I did like when McClane punched Esperanza right after he opens the door. He goes, freedom. And McClane's
yeah.
like, not yet.
The fact that he got to the exact position of this plane landing on foot at this airport.
Bullshit.
Is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
Even like, I can suspend disbelief, but like, he ran around in the sewers and just happened to be on the same runway at the same exact time as that thing landed. You know, he gets out of the way at the last second. That's whatever. That's thrilling. But the fact that
he got back on his bike
doesn't make any sense. Like, right. 5 minutes earlier, he's like, how do I get here? And he's just, like, run around in the underground fucking Dulles. Like, come on. This shit's huge. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How many runways are there? Like, he could have landed on any runway mm-hmm. in this entire airport, and he just picks the same one. They just happen to randomly pick the same one at the same time. Stupid. But whatever, and it works, right? You gotta fucking just, I guess, just kind of fucking let it go.
Have you guys ever listened to the commentary to this film? Have you ever listened to Rennie Harlan's commentary? No. It's funny. He says, you know, that this film is famous for, they wanted to film this in Michigan and Colorado because that's where it snows the most, and they wanted to film this with actual snow, but it didn't end up snowing. Like, it was one of the driest winters of that, you know, of that decade. So what they ended up doing was they ended up either bringing in snow from Canada, which would be hard by the time it got to set.
Sure.
But then if that wouldn't work, they had potato flakes that they would just chop up, and they'd have people dumping potato flakes on them. And by some of those potato flakes got on the lights, and Rennie Harlan said on the commentary, sometimes it would smell like burnt potatoes because like everything would get on the lights and it just wouldn't. it was just awesome. crazy trying to pass the snow off. And eventually they were able to film a couple of days on the snow. It did end up snowing a little bit. But yeah, it's just funny just listening to that. You don't think about that watching a film like this. I think what they did too, you know, that last movie, we mentioned that it was a Christmas film, and, you know, we mentioned that it doesn't really come across as you're watching the movie, oh, it's Christmas time, except for the occasional Christmas tree that they show, or
it's Christmas week.
Yeah, but here they want to get embedded in our brains that yes, it is snowing, it's December, it's very cold.
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve. Like, it's very apparent. Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, they're just kind of overcompensating, I think. Stewart's men show up and throw grenades in the cockpit to kill McClane.
I love this scene, by the way.
This is an interesting scene, although with those
longest
with those
grenades ever.
I was about ready to say, those grenades really sit there for two.
The five minute delay grenades.
5 minute delay. This effect of John coming up and then going down, it doesn't look very good today, but it's so fabulous.
It's still an awesome shot.
It is
an awesome shot.
Yeah, and it's the promo shot. Yeah,
totally.
My favorite part of that is the scream and then the, oh, shit!
It still gets me.
I fucking love that shit.
It's
also great because it sets up, like, everybody thinking, all the terrorists, they think he's dead. Like, they just fucking blew him up. So it kind of gives them that one-up on them.
One of them does see him though get out of the parachute, and he looks over. He goes, "You lucky fuck!" As he's falling down.
Yeah,
so
true that.
One of them does see him, but
that like Wazama's one line?
I do like when he's like he lands. He's like, "Where's the fucking door?" Like, you know, that's the stuff.
That's the stuff he's great at.
More bad ADR. Added,
it is really bad in this movie. Those fucking just like we'll add a line in post production. Stupid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where's the fucking door?
It's, you know, why's
your door in a parachute?
It's a bad ADR line, but at the same time, I used to really laugh at that line, and it still makes me chuckle as I watch.
Sure, it's good comic relief, right? Yeah.
Absolutely,
see the guy get blown up, and it's fucking awesome, and it with a laugh.
And I think it kind of piggybacks on your guys' points too. Like, there's not really that much comedy in this, so I think they just were like, okay, we need a line here, we need a line there. So they did the ADR of this, and it doesn't really.
So, you know, they probably did is they go to movie to test audiences, and they're like, this shit's too fucking, it's not funny enough.
Yeah,
and then they added all that shit later.
Yeah,
Second editing.
So Barnes and McClane, they make their way to the old church, which houses Stewart's little operation. And I do like how Holly is the only one who gives McClane's stealth operation away, which he calls the phone.
Yeah.
Remember pagers?
Yeah, pagers. Yeah, pagers absolutely. Yep.
Well,
yep.
this moment, and actually earlier in the movie, this was what... It's a huge hole in their fucking issue of trying to communicate with the airplanes. And this is just another example of how it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Because the hires an airplane with every seat has a telephone on it, and yet the air control tower can't figure out how to communicate with the fucking pilots in the airplanes.
Yeah.
And nobody throughout the entire movie, even John, who got done calling his wife on an airplane at the beginning of the movie, doesn't think, let's just call the airplane in one of their fucking airplane airphones that it is up there.
Mm-hmm.
They all have them. Or if not all of them, at least the one fucking Holly's on has a phone. And even fucking the reporter guy is on the phone.
Yep.
Everybody's on the phone except the air control tower and the pilots themselves. It doesn't make any sense.
None. Absolutely none.
Just like, what the fuck? Because it's a huge deal, right? Like half this movie, they're like, how do we communicate? We'll do Morse code. What? There's Morse code? They do Morse code on a line. On a frequency nobody even pays attention to, instead of just calling the airplane.
Yep. You're right. You're absolutely right. I do like the fight that develops with when McClane gets discovered by this guy, especially him colluding with an icicle through the eye.
Yeah, great kill.
Me too. It almost reminded me of Harlan's Horror Roots, right? Especially with the shot of it just like protruding out his eye, like when he looks over.
Yeah.
Like it was almost a horror shot.
It's
absolutely.
Shot. It's super gory.
Mm-hmm. I also like the snowmobile chase. I think it's fun. Yeah, I think the conclusion of McClane figuring out that they are indeed using blanks. It's effective. It's ABC action storytelling, but it's definitely effective. And it gets the point across that here's another one who's not playing for the right team. I'm digging it. I'm digging it a lot.
Yeah, it's a good reveal. Mm-hmm. Even leading up to his deal with Dennis Franz and shooting it off, and it's a pretty powerful scene. Actually, you're just like, holy shit, because you don't really know either as an audience the first time.
I feel bad for that guy that just transferred into his unit.
It is effective. You're right, Ammon, because he pushes him against the wall, and then McClane's just firing this gun. It's like, okay, McClane's been sassed by this asshole all fucking movie. He's finally had enough, right? But no, he's just proven that there are blanks in this gun. You're right. It's definitely a savage scene.
But all the shit that goes on the snowmobiles is great. It's an unexpected action scene in a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not expecting a snowmobile chase sequence. Mm-hmm. Like why would that doesn't even make sense for a Die Hard movie, but they threw it in there and it's fun, man. It's good times.
It works.
Yep.
Sets the bar for future movies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Major Grant, he reveals his true colors by slicing, as Batch says, the guy who just transferred into this unit. And
gives him a piece of gum.
Just a piece of gum. Jeez, I'm not accepting gum from anybody, any of you guys anymore. I'm trying to think of how effective this moment was at the time as opposed to now, but it definitely works.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. And again, it's another horror shot. You really feel bad for the guy, and it's another horror shot. Like, this guy's fucking just... I still just cringe at seeing fucking throats getting sliced up, and it always makes me cringe seeing that shit.
And it kind of foreshadows when you first see the guy at the almost beginning of the movie when McClane's talking to him, and he actually says, "I just transferred into this guy's unit."
Mm-hmm. Thornburg then evokes panic by saying word for word what's happening. But is all this really worth the punchline of a taser being set up earlier? Like, all he's doing is reporting what's going on. Yeah, panic does happen, but all he's doing is reporting.
But he's also spreading fear.
He's spreading fear, but nobody else is saying what's going on. He's the one doing it.
I think it works. You're right. He's doing the fear. He's spreading the fear for no other sake than just like sensationalism at this point. But also, like, what else could he have done to deserve the taser? Like, the taser payoff has to be for something pretty big. And him just being an asshole wouldn't have been the same kind of payoff. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Although, like, why is, anybody could have been reporting this because. So the fact that it's him, I guess, just makes it like, oh, you fucking asshole. Because he's doing it again, right? He did the sensational thing with the daughter and the fucking, interviewing, which gave away McClane and Holly's relationship. So it's similar in what he did. So
compare him versus like Sheila McCarthy, the female reporter. Like, she's been trying to report the whole thing, but she didn't start a fucking riot at the airport.
Right.
Like, he in 2 seconds.
Like, he doesn't even think about it. He's just like, whatever.
You know, to follow Batch up there, like, this is the character I would have actually had be the Thornburg of the movie. I would have had her do this. It's not, again, it's the contrivance of getting him up in the air with Holly McClain. I could have had her being the one who evokes a panic like this, but it had to be him. He had to be the one to get tased. And I don't know. It's just a major contrivance.
She's the anti-Thornburg, yet another one, though, because just to show that not all reporters are fucking cocksuckers.
Yeah, it almost makes him worse.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I see what you're saying. It just, for me, it's never bothered me. Like, I get it. It needs to happen. Their characters for the first movie, you gotta give them something to do.
Yeah.
Member berries.
Absolutely. So McClain hitches a ride with the journalist from earlier who... Hooper, another person, she proposes, like, okay, if you get this story, I'll have your baby. He goes, not the ride I'm looking for. Another pretty decent line. I like that line. He jumps on top of the plane, housing all the terrorists, and I always love this stunt, man. I always love the way it looks, like, when that helicopter goes above that plane, and the guy jumps off, and he lands right on it. I really enjoy that stunt.
Totally. It's phenomenal. This whole finale it's epic, man.
It is. It really is. He gets two fights on this wing, one with Major Grant, which ends Raiders of the Lost Ark style, right, with him just getting crunched to shit in that engine. And then the one with Stewart, where McClain pretty much just gets his ass kicked. I don't think he gets one punch in on this guy.
It's all that naked Tai Chi.
Tai Chi will fuck you up.
It really will. He gets dumped off the plane, but McClain's not done, as he had pulled the cap off. Which, I mean, wouldn't that have crashed the plane, you know, if he would have just pulled the cap off? But he pulls out his lighter, says his catchphrase, and blows the plane up.
Mr. Falcon, it's never been the same.
So as you watch this, Ammon, you watch the shit develop, and there are a lot of fucks in this movie. A lot of fucks. So as you're watching this, it's still like, that's the line that just comes to mind.
I always remember
that's the franchise, man.
Mr. Falcon. It's awesome. Really? I love it. Yeah,
that's fucking hilarious. And that's all you think of.
But, like, taking a step back, like, that's the catchphrase for the franchise, right? Yippee-ki-yay. In the context of this movie, doesn't make any sense that he said it at all.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
he just says that to himself all the fucking time now.
Like, he just says it like, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. I'm going to just say that. I mean, at least the next one, it makes a little more sense, and they tie it in a little more. But it's awesome. It's at such an awesome moment in the movie, too. He lights the lighter, yippee-ki-yay, he fucking throws it. The whole plane explodes. Fucking, he saves the day. It creates a landing strip for all the planes to land on. Like, it's pretty awesome. Even though... If you sit and think about it, okay, maybe it doesn't make sense. But for a Die Hard movie to end like that, it's fucking tits.
It really is. I do like the shot of that flame just chasing that plane.
Oh, as it's so good.
It is a great shot. It is a great shot. And you're right. Him saying that line doesn't make any sense in this point. But at the same time, isn't he?
You're waiting for it. Everybody's waiting for it.
Yeah. And he's contractually obligated to say it, right? I mean, it's pretty much in his contract at this point to say it. Although
Does he say it in every single movie?
Yeah.
He kind of does in 4, but not really. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. But yeah, it's
I mean, the fact that there's a catchphrase for this movie that includes the word motherfucker. Like,
true.
Probably the biggest motherfucker catchphrase of all time. It's not like I'll be back or, you know, I am the law or fucking, you know, what's Rambo's, like, I'm your worst nightmare. Like, those are lines that you can say in mixed company and you're not going to get looked at.
But Die Hard comes FBI along, agent.
Yeah. Die Hard comes along and is like, what's the fucking tagline for that movie? Oh, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. And everybody's waiting for it. Your 12-year-old self was waiting for that shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you're not.
That shit is awesome, and it hasn't really been done since either. They don't have taglines with swears in it. It's unheard of. A summer blockbuster that made that much money in the July 4th weekend, and its fucking biggest line is "Yippee ki yay, motherfucker." It's awesome. It's awesome.
Not gonna argue it. Absolutely. I do like the light on the runway it creates, you know, that the flames create and all the planes are landing because of what he created down there. And McClane, instead of like, you know, in the last film, he was just, he was all happy and exuberant. And here he's happy and exuberant, but he's almost like laughing, you know.
He's crazy. He's just like.
He's crazy. Yeah. He's just
lost it.
He's lost it. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I meant to say. He's definitely lost it. It's just
a
funny.
A jet engine, blew up a fucking plane.
Yeah. At the very end, the passengers are coming off, and Holly's like, why does this keep happening to us? Which is a line straight from a trailer. And,
I love his Adrian moment. Holly!
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Holly! Right, dude.
It definitely is an Adrian moment. Absolutely.
That's funny.
That's great. So we end on Let It Snow, and that is our film, boys. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give it? I will once again go to Batch first.
I guess a 7. Not as good as the first one. Solid flick. A lot of good action. A lot of great moments. That's what I give it.
You give it a 7. All right. Ammon.
Geez. So I go back and forth with this movie. I've seen it a handful of times. Of course, growing up, it was always like super awesome. And then for a while, I was annoyed with it. And it just didn't hit all the right notes for me. Watching it now, it's not as good. Obviously, you have to compare it, but it's still entertaining and it still delivers for what it sets out to do.
It's better than most Die Hard in insert something else here movies that kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's still Bruce Willis doing Bruce Willis things with a lot of swears and people getting killed. Good potty count. It's a soft 8/10. Down from my 10/10 of Die Hard. In comparison. Yeah, and that's a little generous. Like, I feel like, you know, 7's probably closer to what it is, but there are things that annoy the shit out of me about this, and the action doesn't hit all the numbers like it does. But at the same time, it's a very entertaining movie, and there are some fucking really memorable, epic, awesome things that happen in this. Mm. So, yeah, it's a soft 8. Strong 7, soft 8, somewhere around there.
I felt a lot like Alien Resurrection watching this movie because
really,
yeah, and I'll tell you why. There are definitely highlights, as we mentioned, him coming up in that cockpit, this final fight on this plane, the way he actually makes flames on the runway, kind of he's the hero who once again saves the day. I love the character McClane, you know, not as much as I love Ripley, but I do love the character McClane. But it's hard to get past just how stupid this plot is. This is a crazy, ridiculous plot, and it's hard to get past that as an adult. I'll be honest. But the same as Resurrection, there was a stupid plot, but I'm still seeing my favorite characters do my favorite things. And here is the same exact situation. So given that, it is a solid 6/10 for me. The action, it picks up as the movie goes on. The beginning, I wasn't really with it, but it picked up. There's some great lines here. But man, it's a really tough movie to get through just because I just cannot get past how stupid it is.
It's you know, the stupidest of all the Die Hard movies in terms of the plan and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
For me, it works because it's a summer blockbuster movie. And true. I know Moreno's like yelling at me right now. Just because it's the summer doesn't mean you have to turn your brain off, you cocksucker. That's what he's yelling at me right now. Mm-hmm. But like, I give a movie like this a little more leeway. They made it for pop. It's a popcorn movie.
Exactly.
And yeah, they made it as such. And for me, that works. Like, it's not supposed to be more than that. And as a follow-up to Die Hard, I mean, they could have done a better job. I'm not going to say that they could have not have, but like, they did a pretty decent, it's a decent follow-up. For him, the 10/10 action movie, like, how do you follow that up with?
Yeah,
it's not fantastic. It's not equal, but it's not terrible either.
And this is a movie that made even more money than its predecessor. So people still flocked to it and people still loved it. Roger Ebert, who we mentioned last movie, did not give that movie a good review. This one, believe it or not, he gave a really good review too. It's just one of those movies. You're right, man. It's, you can get past it because it's a summer blockbuster and you're having a good time watching it. But I'm just saying, as an adult, I'm looking at this, I'm saying, is like, fucking stupid.
You watch it when you're a kid, it's amazing. It's a 10/10. It is a 10/10 when you watch it when you're a kid. Now there's some nostalgia going on. You're right. It's the McClane character. I like all the ties in. It's the member berries for Die Hard. That works for me. And it's just a few the few good action scenes, and it's not as good. It's still pretty good.
All right, boys, that does it for Die Hard 2. Next week, the studio kind of, they talk McTiernan into coming back, and they Bruce Willis comes back 5 years later for Die Hard with a Vengeance. We will definitely get into that next week. But two films in, guys, and I'm having a really good time going over this series with you guys. I thank you guys thank you guys for joining me on this. And by the way, an epic thank you to Sneaky Juan Carlos, who fucking outdid himself yet again with his logo for this podcast. Thank you, sir. You always come through. I couldn't ask for a better fucking dude to do these logos. I sent it to you guys. I sent it to Law and Moreno. We all and all of us just laughed our asses off at it. He's fucking phenomenal. Thank you, Sneaky Juan.
And so sneaky.
Oh, he's so fucking sneaky. And then thanks to our deep voice guy who once again did the intros to this. I appreciate that. Adam Bunch, thank you, sir. And guys, I will see you next week for Die Hard with a Vengeance. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
What was it you said to me before? Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Ho, ho.
I was supposed to interview the guy. I shouldn't say I was supposed to. I was trying to get an interview with him around the time that that Hercules movie was coming out. And man, I was all excited. He was like, yeah, I'll be there. And then he said he had a press tour to do. And by the time he got back, the movie was already out and it tanked. And I don't think he wanted to talk about it anymore. And so I was like,
that
fuck,
man. Elvis meets Hercules movie. That would be fucking tremendous.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? You're right about that. So.
Ho, ho, ho.
So Colonel Stewart gives the reporters two words, fucking you, and while it's completely unfair to compare... Oh, I just went through that, the Hans thing. Okay, never mind. Let me go on with my notes.
Ho, ho, ho.
Even though it's been 16 years since 9/11, I still can't watch these passengers getting happy to land and then crash on the runway, and it doesn't have the same type of fun I used to have with it, you know. And not to mention, I'm gonna be flying to Lollapalooza here in a couple of days, and just watching this in preparation of this fucking podcast, it made me fucking just angry at myself. I chose this retrospective to do it on, you know. It's like fuck.
Garrett's catching the bus now.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there by next Wednesday. I'll be driving. It's not, again, it's the contrivance of getting him up in the air with Holly McClane up there. Which, by the way, a side note, did I ever tell you guys I met Bonnie Bedelia one time?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Do you remember, this is going off kilter here, but do you remember the Claremont Hotel in Berkeley out there?
In California? No.
You'd see it from the freeway. It was always a lit up hotel. I worked there for a summer and a half. And she stayed there one time with her husband. And all we could talk about was how surprisingly nice her rack was. That entire time.
Knew it. Clint Slayer. Fucking slaying McClane's wife.
That's all we talked about was just how great her rack was.
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget,
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob Odenkirk.